From Feature Story News in New York, this is FSN Reports. I'm Simon Marks. Today on the programme, remembering Joan Rivers. She died here yesterday at the age of 81. A groundbreaker for women in comedy, a caustic mouth that sometimes offended, an American original whose career spanned half a century.
My father was funny. My sister is very funny. She's a lawyer. As a child, I absolutely knew I was funny. And my father was a doctor. We went on a fishing trip with other doctors. And I remember I was maybe seven telling them a story and they were laughing with me, not at me. And I knew as a child, I said, I've got something here.
That's a special extended interview with the late Joan Rivers on today's FSN Reports. And it follows our bulletin of Friday's main news.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. U.S. President Barack Obama says he's skeptical that a new ceasefire between Ukrainian leaders and pro-Moscow militants will hold. The truce was signed in the Belarusian capital Minsk to bring an end to 5 months of conflict in the east of Ukraine. But the rebels say they are still determined to seek independence from Ukraine. Daria Bandarchuk reports from Moscow.
The ceasefire agreement envisages a prisoner exchange, a source close to the talks told Reuters news agency on Friday. The armed forces on both sides, however, will remain in their current positions. The implementation of the ceasefire is to be monitored by the representatives of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. Meanwhile, the leader of the self-proclaimed Luhansk People's Republic, Igor Plotnitsky, told reporters that the ceasefire does not change the course of the rebels and their intent to split away from Ukraine.
But the ceasefire comes as NATO has announced plans for a new 4,000-strong rapid reaction force in response to Russian actions in Ukraine. The military alliance's members have also been discussing ways to combat Islamic State militants in Iraq and Syria. Ollie Barrett reports from the NATO summit in Newport, Wales.
The UK will contribute 1,000 of the 4,000 rapid response troops. The force is due to be ready by the end of 2015 and could be deployed anywhere in the world in 2 to 5 days. It is a clear message, however, to Vladimir Putin that NATO can respond quickly to aggression in Eastern Europe. Petro Poroshenko has been talking up here the ceasefire announced for the east of his country, but NATO leaders say sanctions won't be eased on Russia unless it ends its destabilizing influence. The US, meanwhile, says a coalition has been taking shape here to take greater action against Islamic State militants. The UK says it is not ruling out involvement in airstrikes in Syria and Iraq.
The United States government has confirmed a U.S. airstrike has killed the leader of Somali Islamist group Al-Shabaab. Ahmed Ghadani was one of the U.S.'s most wanted men, with a $7 million bounty on his head. The White House said Al-Shabaab is the largest Al-Qaeda affiliate in Africa. President Barack Obama said this is one piece in a global fight against militant Islam.
We are going to achieve our goal. We are going to degrade and ultimately defeat ISIL, the same way that we have gone after Al-Qaeda, the same way that we have gone after the Al-Qaeda affiliate in Somalia, where we released today the fact that we had killed the leader of Al-Shabaab in Somalia. And have consistently worked to degrade their operations. We have been very systematic and methodical in going after these kinds of organizations that may threaten U.S. personnel and the homeland.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. The U.S. economy added fewer jobs than expected in August. Meanwhile, the unemployment rate fell another tenth of a percent. Nick Harper reports from New York.
When compared to previous months, this latest set of figures looks distinctly disappointing. The average over the last year has been 212,000 new jobs added each month, yet August only managed to muster 142,000. Much of that has been blamed on the shedding of nearly 20,000 positions in the food and beverage industry. The silver lining was an uptick in wage growth and the unemployment level falling from 6.2% to 6.1%. In reaction, Wall Street fell slightly on opening. Nick Harper, New York.
And the Italian state is set to start growing marijuana for medical use, the health ministry announced on Friday. The plants will be grown at an army facility outside Florence and could bring marijuana-based drugs into Italian pharmacies by the end of 2015. But authorities are keen to stress this isn't a step towards legalization for recreational use. Elena Casas reports from Rome.
The first cannabis plants grown by the Italian state are set to be planted at an army facility near Florence and will be used by the Italian Health Service to make pain relief drugs aimed at HIV and cancer patients. Theoretically, you can already be prescribed cannabis for medical use in Italy, but only 60 patients are actually receiving it. The Health Ministry is keen to stress the therapeutic benefits have been medically proven, and this isn't a step on the road towards legalising the drug for recreational use. Cannabis possession in small quantities for personal use is decriminalised in Italy, but the sale or cultivation of the drug can still incur long prison sentences. Elena Casas, Rome.
And that's the latest from Feature Story News. Rebecca Foster reporting.
From Feature Story News in New York today, I'm Simon Marks. Welcome to FSN Reports. When the news of Joan Rivers' death broke yesterday, I was on a train from Washington to the Big Apple, and you could hear the gasps as people aboard learnt the news from their smartphones. At the age of 81, Joan Rivers had spent more than 50 years entertaining audiences around the world, and often causing controversy with a brand of humour and commentary that was today widely being described as caustic, but sometimes was also downright acidic. Whether you loved her or loathed her, Joan Rivers was an American original. So today we bring you an extended interview with her, first broadcast on Britain's LBC Radio in 2012. At the time, she was promoting a new book called I Hate Everyone, and she told Ian Dale why she penned it.
I think I represent womankind. And all of us don't like a lot of things. And I just wrote it all down in the book. And I've gotten women saying, that's right. And men, that's right, that's right, that's right. I hate this. I hate that. I hate children on planes. I hate old people that are in front of me on a shop, on a checkout line. I hate stupid obituaries. I hate dumb wedding announcements. Yeah, it's everything that just annoys you through life.
Do you think women hate better than men?
I think women are much craftier. Yeah, men are stupider. You know, take that as a compliment.
I do. Yeah, I
don't like it, but it's okay. What's on the telly? You know, women hold a grudge.
What do you actually like, though? I mean, you've written a book about hate. What do you like?
I like my work. I love my work. I usually like my family. Love my dogs.
Not always, though.
No, of course not. And anyone that says, oh, I love my family all the time, those are usually the ones that pick up a gun and shoot later.
Do your family ever complain that you use them in your act a lot?
No, because if you really went back and looked at my humour, I was always the butt. You know, my wedding night, my husband took a look. I came out of the bathroom naked or something, I don't know, and he said, let me help you with the buttons. You know, it was always about me, not him.
Yeah. You're going on tour. You're off to Dublin tonight. You're going to be playing in London as well.
Royal Albert Hall. Yeah.
Indeed. Now, I mean, that is a magnificent venue. Have you ever played it before?
I don't think I've played Royal Albert Hall. I have to ask my manager. Did I play Royal Albert Hall? No, first time Royal Albert Hall.
I saw you in
played the Haymarket, which I love.
I think I saw... Was it the Haymarket? I saw you. It was about 1986 I came to see you.
That could have been of the town. It could have been... God knows.
You had a great effect on me, because your brand of humour is just very un-British. You really, at that point, there were no comedians in this country that really shocked people.
Yeah.
And the audience, I remember, was sort of sitting there. I mean, they were convulsed with laughter, but it was partly nervous laughter, because they didn't know what you were going to say next.
And they shouldn't. Humour should be a great release. You should laugh at things that no one else dares to talk about.
Do you find that we in Britain laugh at things that people in America don't?
No, but I'll tell you what I love about you Brits is once you like somebody, once you like a performer, they stay. In America, we love you, we hate you, we love you, we hate you. You know, in Britain, once they say you're Oz to the end. So I love the loyalty of the Brits.
We have a much dirtier sense of humour than Americans, don't we?
I haven't seen my act.
Well, you being the exception.
Thank you.
No, but there is a certain... prudish majority, I think, in America that really don't like any kind of smutty humour. I mean, we had all the Carry On films, we have lots of comedians
who
do, I'll say, smutty humour rather than really, really dirty humour. But we just love it.
Well, I didn't.
What does that say about us?
That you're more relaxed. I just think you better laugh at everything, is which I do. I do Auschwitz jokes, which I get a lot of flack for. But do a joke, move it on. Do a joke, move it forward, move it forward. I just think it's so important. You know, because I think humor is DNA. I think you can't learn it. You either have it or you don't have it.
Can you learn to be a comedian?
No, it's either you have it or you don't have it. And it's a very musical thing. You hear the beats in your head. No, you can't teach somebody to be funny. You can't teach somebody to be a good actor. They either have it or they don't have it.
Do you still get nervous before you go on stage?
Constantly.
Really?
I don't come back and talk to me before a show. Ever. I just don't want to see you. I'm nervous. I'm crazy. I don't like it. I listen off stage. Are they laughing? Are they not laughing at the opening act? Yeah, I don't. I'm very nervous. Very nervous.
And have you ever had sort of comedian's block? You go on stage and you just know it's not working and there's nothing you can do to rescue yourself.
Yeah. Every time. yeah. It's terrible. But see, Bill Cosby, who's a good friend of mine, he said, I go out there, I try for 5 minutes, and they don't like it. He said, I go on automatic, because I'm Bill Cosby, I know I'm funny. And I go out there, if they don't like me in 5 minutes, I will do anything to get them to like me. Okay, let's talk about this. Okay, let's try that. No, I push to the end.
And can you immediately tell what an audience is going to be like? You tell a couple of jokes, and you know, there isn't a reaction. You think, we've got to do something here.
Yeah, you can tell. I always say the air is heavy. Yeah, you can tell immediately. It's comedy is very, that's why I get me gay people in front. You give me 12 gay men in the front row, I will give you a great show.
Well, you've got 1.5 in the studio.
Yeah, well.
We're not sure about the other one.
Give me a gay man, I will give you a good show.
Why?
Give me a lesbian, put her in back.
Why is that, though?
Gay men just laugh at anything. They just want to have a good time. I'm thrilled. I adore gay men. You say it, you go, tassel. Ah, she said tassel. They just have a good time. And when I look in the audience and I see them in the front row, I know we are going to have fun.
So gay men is your ideal audience. Is that because they're not threatening in any way?
No, because they just, because I guess they were outsiders, they laugh at more things. I don't know. One of my biggest regrets is my grandson is not gay. Because I have nobody to sit at my feet when I get old and say, Grandma, did you really know Judy Garland?
Now, Joan told me she believes being funny is in her DNA. So I asked her, how did her funny manifest itself?
My father was funny. My sister is very funny. She's a lawyer. And I think she wins her cases on being funny as well as being very, very, very smart. As a child, I absolutely knew I was funny. And my father was a doctor. We went on a fishing trip with other doctors. And I remember I was maybe 7 telling them a story and they were laughing with me, not at me. And I knew as a child, I said, I've got something here. Right from the beginning.
And you can use comedy to really diffuse quite difficult situations sometimes, can't you?
Everything. That's why funerals, everything. I laugh at funerals. But that's how I get through life. And sometimes it doesn't work. You'll say to your friends, blah, 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 and you'll do the 16 jokes that are funny about something. And they'll say, it's too soon. But too bad. That's how I do it. But my very good friend, Martin, he lost his partner. And I flew out to be with him in Devon immediately after the thing. And it was a very young man and very, very sad. And it was all very sad. We're driving in the country lane and a neighbor stopped the car to say, oh, I'm so sorry, Digby's dead. I said, Digby's dead? This happened? But it made Martin laugh. Oh, my God, Digby's dead. Who knew?
Have you ever given a eulogy?
Yes.
God, I would have died to have been there, Jane.
I give eulogies, and I usually discuss, don't touch the things in the house that already have a sticker on them. I've gone through. I hate when people aren't dead, like old people that are, the minute they're bedridden, they say things like, the maid is stealing my jewelry. And I always go, vroom, vroom, vroom. Who took your jewelry, Grandma?
When you go on to do, I mean, if you're on Letterman or Jay Leno or somebody like
I'm never on Jay Leno.
Are you never on
Jay?
Why not?
Because I think he's the biggest, stupidest bore in the world.
Really?
Give me one good give me a great Jay Leno line.
I can't.
There you go.
Yeah, but that's because I don't live in America and I don't see
He's here.
He must have something.
Letterman
otherwise
is wonderful. Letterman is great. Jimmy Fallon is great. Jimmy Kimmel is great. There are a lot of great. Leno, the luckiest white man in the world.
But when you go on a show like that and you know that they are expecting you to be funny, they're expecting you to perform, and if you're not in the mood, how do you sort of psych yourself up to do what's expected?
That's your job. You know, that's your job. That's going on stage for an hour and a half and doing my show when I'm on the tour. That, it's not about me. It's about what I do.
But you regard it as a job.
I regard it that they're expecting me to be funny. And that's what I'm there for, and I damn well better. I want to please them. I'm still a child. I want to please them.
But I heard you say recently that the thing that most frightens you is not working.
Yes.
Most people at your age would think, well, actually, I've earned quite a bit of money. I quite like a quiet life now.
Why? What could be nicer than to go on a stage and say something that you think is funny and 4,000 people think it's funny too? How great is that? How great is that for someone to come up to you on a street and say, you made me laugh for the first time after my mother died?
When you were growing up, who were your comedic heroes, your inspirations?
My dad, as I said, was a doctor, and we would go make house calls. Those are the days. And he would leave the radio on. So I grew up listening to a man named Jack Benny, who was brilliant. And then as I got older, Lenny Bruce, who doesn't mean anything to anybody in this generation, but he was the most brilliant comedic mind of the 20th century.
This may be a question that you've never been asked before, but have you ever contemplated plastic surgery?
You know, it's a wonderful question, and the answer is I have thought about it, and when the time comes, I have
Why
done...
has your nose just got longer?
I love plastic surgery. First of all, it's very convenient now. When I fart, it comes out of my ears. So it just... Great.
You see, I mean, speaking as a male member of the species, I just don't get why any woman would want to subject themselves to it. Just don't
Are you out of your
it.
Mind? Are you straight or gay?
Gay.
Okay. And you
Did
look
you
at
need to ask?
Do you No, you say no, you can't tell because I didn't see your slippers. I don't know what's going on under the table there. No, you want to look good. Everybody wants to look good. And look at every cover. If Kate Middleton looked like me, would I be walking around with the big ring now? I don't think so. So you want to look good, and that's what plastic surgery allows people to do.
But the first time that you had anything done, you must have been absolutely petrified when you went under the knife.
No.
No?
No, because it's a business, and our business, seriously, so we're getting serious now. Our business, you have to look good. You don't have to look gorgeous, but you have to look good. And I had big bags under my eyes. I was 32 years old, and I had just done the Carson show. And somebody, my agent said, get rid of your bags.
32 years old. That was the first time.
Get rid of the bags under your eyes. And I did. Made a stunning purse. It was, well, I believe in recycling.
Now, we do a lot on my show over the years on depression and mental illness. Now, you've suffered from depression in
all
in
the
your
time.
Time, haven't you? All the time. What causes your depression?
Life. Terribly sad. Terribly sad. I won't, if you really, life is all endings. Life is all losses. Nothing good stays. And that's why I get very angry when it's a good moment. For God's sakes, no, it's a good moment.
And is there something particular that sparks it off? Do you know when it's approaching? Alistair Campbell, you probably don't know, but he's Tony Blair's director of communications. He famously suffers from depression. He's written books about it. And he says that he can tell within a week ahead it's coming, and there's nothing that he can do to stop it.
No, I just, I will not give in to it. I will not. I keep very busy. Will not give in to depression.
And is that the key to just be constantly on the move, constantly doing things?
And I have a friend who's very smart, who said, she said, every day you say, what are the two best things that happened to me today? not what was the one good thing in all this crap that happened every day. What are the two best things that happened every day? And I don't care who you are, there are two good things that happened today. And look at that. I'm very much that kind of a person. I stand there in my house at night by myself and I go, I am the luckiest person in the world. And then I kick my dogs. And you two shut up.
But, I mean, you've had some tragic things happen in your life. I mean, I guess most people...
Well, my thighs.
I can't see them from here.
Oh, they're all over. Yeah, of course, my husband committed suicide. Yeah. I was fired publicly from Fox. A lot of it. I was swindled out of $37 million. Yeah, I've had some bad things happen.
$37
million? Yes. Somebody got my name and likeness, and I had to buy it back. $37 million. That's why, what's his name? Prince could not be called Prince. He had to be called the man formerly known as Prince because somebody bought his name and likeness. I knew about that.
Your daughter, Melissa.
Melissa, she hates me.
You've had your ups and downs with her over the years. Well, you're doing a TV show. She can't
hate
that much.
Yeah, she hates me. General Melissa, she hates me.
Well, how
she hates me because my foot is smaller than her, so she can't wear my shoes. She's a very shallow girl.
How has your relationship with her developed over the years?
Great. Actually, we work together in General Melissa. And and she's terrific. She also produces Fashion Police. And I think we have it's very hard for two women, and it's very hard for a mother to understand that she's grown up. You know, at one point you've got to say, you're grown up. You figure it out. But you can't help it because mothers always are right.
Mm.
But it's a very good relationship, thank God. And she'll be very sorry when I die. She finds out there's nothing left. She'll be sobbing.
She'll say, where has that $37 million dollars gone?
Where? What do you mean nothing? What do you mean nothing?
Now, you appeared on the Comedy Central roast not so long ago. Now, that word has a slightly different meaning in this country, which we don't
know. What does that mean?
No, I can't tell you. I'll tell you afterwards.
Oh, all right. Oh, really?
Now,
oh.
You laughed along with the jokes, but were you hurt by anything that was said about you?
No, because I could have told them. They do the roast, and it's a very big honour to be roasted, all that nonsense. And there's a check at the end of it. And,
so you're still motivated by money?
Of course, I support. If you're ever in New York and you need a doctor, mention my name because I've sent him through medical school. you have no idea how many people I have taken care of. They said they were going to roast you. I said, I know right away they're going to do plastic surgery jokes. They're going to do old jokes. I could have told them what jokes they were going to do. So it didn't bother me because I knew already exactly where they were going. And then I did a rebuttal, which was, she said humbly, which is a very good rebuttal. I worked on that rebuttal for 5 weeks.
Really?
So I took the night, if you know what I'm saying. So it was okay.
But everyone has feelings. What hurts you?
Everything.
So, I mean, so there would have been things said that night. You might have been prepared for them, but some of them might still get to you.
Everything, but you just, you're in the business, that's it, you have to take it. You know, and if you can't take it, I hate it when you'll do a joke and then people will laugh and laugh, and then you'll do a joke about something that they do and they don't laugh.
Yeah.
And you want to go, wait a second, we were just laughing about this and this and this and this. And so, very often in my act, very early on, like I was talking about, I think Mexicans are very ugly people, probably lovely people, but stupid because they hit piñatas and candy comes out. You know what I'm talking about? If you're going to hit, diamonds should come out. You stand there, you're a dope person, and you're hitting this thing for 2 hours and you get a Tootsie Roll? Oh, I don't think so. It's morons. So I'll do like, I start out with Mexican jokes and they get very upset. And I always say to them, calm down because we're getting everybody here.
Mm.
And we're all going to laugh at everybody. And then it means nothing. But that goes back to Lenny Bruce.
I mean, racial humor is difficult, isn't it? Because you can potentially end your career with one joke.
Yes. And I find that outrageous. Because everybody does racial jokes. And it's just silly. You know, I live in New York on Fifth Avenue, and we have the parades. Every ethnic group marches every Sunday in the fall. Oh, crap, who's out there today, you know? The only good parade is the Japanese, because they sneak up the avenue. You never see them. They hide behind bushes. So I can't wait for the Japanese parade. But I go down the list very often.
For laughing at that.
I'm in New York. When I'm in New York, I go down the list of all the different parades. And it's very funny. People will laugh and laugh and laugh. And then you say Polish. You see two people stop laughing. I mean, you know, you go, it's okay. Meanwhile, we just laughed at Chinese, and we just laughed at Russian, and we just laughed at Greek. So calm down.
What do you find to laugh at most about us?
About the Brits? I know you very little. I don't understand you people. You know what it is? You're very cold.
Really?
Oh, you keep your hidden inside. You say to an Italian, your mother died. My mother died! You say to a British person, your mother died. Who got her shoes? That's all. Inside, very inside. You don't show your emotion.
What aspect of your life at the moment do you enjoy most? Is it still doing the stand-up comedy?
The aspect of my life that I enjoy the most, I know I should say my family and all that, which I do love. I love perform. I love being in the business. I love my business. I love being busy.
Do you fear death?
Not at all. I fear, see, we're getting serious here. I think it'll be very difficult for my daughter. But I don't fear. I just want it fast. I do not plan to linger. Dr. Kevorkian.
Dignitas.
Oh.
Here you come.
Yeah, I don't.
Not yet, obviously, but.
Yeah. You know, pull the plug. Pull the plug. Or else, don't pull the plug. Melissa, get away from me with that pillow.
What do you think? What about,
I'm just sleeping.
It's a horrible thing to ask in a way, but what do you hope people say in your obituaries?
Who gives? Can you blame the? Who gives a f***? It's like, I love, who cares? Once you're dead, who cares? Vincent Van Gogh couldn't sell a picture in his lifetime, and now they're worth $50, $60 million. Who cares? Somebody should have bought a little picture from that poor thing. Maybe they did, he couldn't hear them. Hey, how much?
But of course, the great thing is, I mean, when comedians die, I mean, their jokes live on because we've got DVDs and all the rest of it now. That 10, 50, 100 years' time, people can still enjoy Joan Rivers.
And some of them that you see, go look up W.C. Fields or go look up Jack Benny, who I go look up Lenny Bruce or go look up a Fanny Bryce. And you think, they're funny. And they're still funny. I love looking at old comics and see what made people laugh at them.
Well, it's been great to meet you, Jane.
It's been a pleasure.
I have been a fan for years, and I'm not just saying that.
Yeah, sure. You told us a joke.
No. Yeah, I did actually too. You're right, but then I've always rather liked her too. But you sort of meet someone that you've kind of grown up with, and you often wonder what they're going to be like when you meet them.
Who is the worst person you've met?
The worst person.
Most disappointing.
I've met. God.
Disappointing.
That is a really interesting question. I love all my guests.
Oh, see. Oh, such a cobbler. You know, when you say somebody was so dull, you know, that kind of thing. I was so surprised.
Yeah, I actually can't think of too many where I have been really... Actually, no, I can. But I can't... I'll tell you off air.
Okay.
Joan Rivers, thank you very much indeed.
Give me a hint.
Joan's book is an author.
Man or woman?
Man.
Oh.
But he's British. You may not have heard of him.
Is he like
Joan
Nazis?
Rivers, I hate everyone.
The marriage to Angelina Jolie?
Published by Berkeley, 1899, in hardback.
Joan Rivers talking there to Ian Dale on Britain's LBC Radio. That interview was first broadcast back in 2012, when Joan Rivers was a sprightly 79-year-old. And that's FSN Reports for this Friday. I'm Simon Marks. For everyone with FSN everywhere, have a great weekend. From New York, goodbye.